The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We have been looking at gaps, spaces between living things, between life and non-life, between nothing and something. For those of you that have listened to the programs over a period of time, I'm sure you're well aware of that. Perhaps there are some who are just beginning to listen, and you may not have that experience. In recent programs, we have talked about the problem of plants, that there really is nothing that could give rise to the plants as we know them. We have talked a little bit about the variety of plants. We've talked about the structures, the characteristics of plants that make them so different from other forms of life. In the last program, we had looked at a quote from Dr. E.J.H. Corner of Cambridge University, who teaches botany there. And he's made a rather candid observation about the general problem of trying to have plants evolve when there really is nothing for them to evolve from. The quote that we had noted was simply this statement, quote, "Much evidence can be adduced in favor of the theory of evolution from biology, biogeography, and paleontology, but I still think that to the unprejudiced, the fossil record of plants is in favor of special creation," end quote. Now, I would argue, obviously, that the evidence he is talking about here from biology, biogeography, and paleontology really is not as compelling as he apparently thinks it is. But in any case, he admits very candidly that the plants, so far as our knowledge of them from the fossil record is concerned, simply appear in the record. There are no missing links that lead away from them to some other organism. There is nothing that leads from some mysterious entity in the record up to the plants. In the book called The Evolution of Life by E.C. Olson, he made this comment. "A third fundamental aspect of the record is somewhat different. Many new groups of plants and animals appear suddenly, apparently without any close ancestors. Most major groups of organisms, phyla, subphyla, and even classes, have appeared in this way," end quote. To this point, I have not chosen to take time and try and help those of you that really don't have much of a background in biology understand what our system of classification is. It probably will be important to do that, but it's a little difficult to do that in 12-minute segments, which is what our programs are. In any case, these terms, phyla, subphyla, and classes, are the upper level of the classification system. That is, they are taxa, groups of organisms that are large groups, major groups. There are 10 animal phyla, for example. One example of that would be arthropoda. All of the arthropods, those organisms with exoskeletons, would be in that phylum. And subphyla would be divisions of the phyla, and classes then would be divisions of the subphyla. Now, we'll leave that again for the moment, but the point of the comment is simply that the major groups, those that involve those categories that he mentioned, simply have appeared in the fossil record with the organisms whole, not any missing links leading away in one direction or another. And this is simply, you may hold whatever belief you wish about the subject that we're discussing, but this simply is the fact of the case. And if you're going to try and find some kind of connecting link, then you have to do it as a matter of imagination, not as a matter of scientific fact. He said that this is usually explained away by the argument, that is, Olson, that the fossil record did not record intermediates. But some paleontologists disagree and believe that these events tell a story not in accord with the theory and not seen among living organisms. Now, I had occasion earlier to observe, this was one of Darwin's comments in Origin of the Species, He lamented the fact of the lack of intermediate species or missing links, and we talked about that some at that time. We will have occasion to do that when we address the general subject of fossils, which will be shortly. But it is a problem. It is one that many evolutionists ignore. It is a problem that many evolutionists act as though it were not a problem, when in fact there are fellow evolutionists who are quite candid about the difficulty of the problem. But again, the point here simply is that here are evolutionists that are admitting very candidly that the major groups, including plants, simply appear in the record without any connecting links that are going to connect them to anything else. Now, I want to read a paragraph from Luther Sunderland's book, Darwin's Enigma. The title of the paragraph is The End of Gradualism. Today, many scientists are abandoning gradualistic evolution, the idea that things simply came into existence gradually over long periods of time, because of two undeniable characteristics of the fossil record: the abrupt appearance of new basic types of organisms, followed by little or no change. Now, those two things are very important. We will probably spend some time discussing organisms that appear early in the fossil record and exist. When they first appear, they have the same identical characteristics that organisms that represent those groups have today. If you're using evolutionary time frame, this means that they have existed for hundreds of millions of years with absolutely no change. This is a problem for the idea of evolution, as we have talked about before. And I think it's interesting to note this here. Now, let's look at a couple other comments about plants, and then we will go on to our next gap, that gap between plants and animals. C.A. Arnold, in a book entitled An Introduction to Paleobotany, made this comment, quote, "It has long been hoped that extinct plants will ultimately reveal some of the stages through which existing groups have passed during the course of their development. But it must be freely admitted that this aspiration has been fulfilled to a very slight extent, even though paleobotanical research has been in progress for more than 100 years. I want you to listen to his next statement. As yet, we have not been able to trace the phylogenetic history, the evolutionary history, of a single group of modern plants from its beginning to the present," end quote. Now, let me read the last sentence again. "As yet, we have not been able to trace the phylogenetic history of a single group of modern plants from its beginning to the present." Now, this is a tremendously important statement and an unbelievably important admission on the part of the evolutionists. The picture that you get when you pick up biology textbooks and read is that here we have this connection of all the organisms with one another from beginning to now, with all the missing links in place, a traceable line of development from them, etc. These quotes that I have been reading indicate very plainly this simply is not true. Whatever the evolutionists might wish to find, what is actually found in the fossil record is very, very different from that. And this is something that you're not going to understand this if you watch the usual PBS programs or the Time Life presentations or many of the other things that you watch on some of the biological programs on television or elsewhere. And if you are attempting to make sense out of this controversy between creation and evolution, then I think these are things that are factual, which you need to have in mind in order to come to careful reasoned conclusions about it. Now, there's a man by the name of Axelrod, Daniel I. Axelrod. He wrote an article entitled Evolution of the Psilophyte Paleoflora in Evolution. This generally includes what are known as vascular plants that have tubules in them that conduct water or food or whatever. This is the man's statement. Quote, "Since vascular plants had already attained some diversity of type by early Cambrian, their earlier evolution must have taken place in Precambrian time." Now, we've talked about Cambrian before. Cambrian is the first strata where there are unquestioned fossils. And this man is saying that all of the vascular plants had already become diverse by early Cambrian. This, in geologic time scheme, this is 550 to 600 million years ago. And what he's saying is that early in the Cambrian record, the vascular plants are there, already diverse from one another. And if evolution is true, then they must have occurred sometime prior to that. And we go back beyond Cambrian, and then the fuss begins about whether fossils actually existed at that point. Now, a little bit further in the article, he made this comment. Judging from the inferred nature of Cambrian land plants present in the strata that represent the earliest unquestioned fossils. Judging from the inferred nature of Cambrian land plants, the late Proterozoic land flora may have been nearly as complex as that which has been preserved in the late Silurian to Middle Devonian rocks. Now, Proterozoic would be the time period, the era that occurred before Cambrian. And what he's saying is that the plants prior to Cambrian would have to have been as diverse as what we see in Cambrian. And if evolution is true, that's quite true also. But the difficulty is providing evidence for the assertion. And the fact is that is very difficult, if not impossible, to come by. Now, I want to read one more quote because it gets us then to the question of land plant animals. What I've tried to demonstrate here is that apart from wishful thinking, the fact of the matter is there simply are no organisms that could connect plants with anything else. Stefan Bengston wrote an article entitled The Solution to a Jigsaw Puzzle in Nature in June of 1990. He made a very interesting comment early in the article, which I find fascinating. The statement was, quote, paleontologists are traditionally famous or infamous for reconstructing whole animals from the debris of death. Mostly they cheat, end quote. Now, I will not comment on the latter statement here, but I find it very interesting nonetheless. The point I want to get to is this. If any event in life's history resembled man's creation myths, it is this sudden diversification of marine life when multicellular organism took over as the dominant actors in ecology and evolution. Baffling and embarrassing to Darwin, this event still dazzles us and stands as a major biological revolution on a par with the invention of self-replication and the origin of the eukaryotic cell. Now, I've read all of that to get to this sentence. The animal phyla emerged out of the Precambrian mist with most of the attributes of their modern descendants, end quote. Now, we'll pursue this in the next program, but we're finding that a statement has been made here essentially like that for plants, that the major groups of animals simply appear in the record and there's no history of where they came from.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.